Hello, everyone, and welcome into CrushTheStreet.com. Today, we're continuing to bring to the table new investment ideas and trends that are coming onto the market in a material way. And, you know, of course, this is to impact our lives and to position ourselves ahead of the trends to come, which is very exciting. So without any further ado, I want to introduce my listeners to Penny White. She's the co-founder, president, CEO of Yield Growth. She's a serial entrepreneur. A magnificent history, 2 decades of experience from online music, international film distribution, mobile payments, blockchain technology, crowdsourcing, renewable energy, pharmaceuticals, e-commerce, and cannabis. Also co-founded Maris Labs, Inc., which was acquired in 2017 for $342 million. Yield Growth, the company that she's representing and part of right now, trades under the ticker symbol BOSS, BOSS, on the CSE, and on the OTCQB under BOSQF. This is a wellness company involved in cannabis and starting to circle back into the edible mushroom space. So again, this is a brand new decade. We've seen what happened in cannabis. And things are moving forward here in a very material way. So without any further ado, Penny White, thanks for coming on Crush the Street with me today.
Thank you, Kenneth. Thanks for the great intro. And it's a pleasure to be here. I'm excited.
Well, let's start here. Can you talk to us a little on the wellness industry and how it pertains to cannabis? What have we seen over the last number of years surrounding cannabis? And I'd follow up with, what is mainstream conventional wisdom surrounding it right now? Is it being welcomed by the pharmaceutical industry, or is it still kind of some, you know, far-reaching alternative of voodoo medicine as it pertains to, you know, your everyday pharmaceutical companies?
Well, you know, if you look at the size of the international wellness industry, the Global Wellness Institute says it's worth $4.2 trillion. So if you look at cannabis as a wellness product, which is how the Yield Growth Corp deals with it, it has huge, huge potential. And the pharmaceutical companies are definitely taking it very seriously. It's made incredible headway over the past 5 years, coming out of prohibition, where it was a criminal substance, to now being completely legal in jurisdictions like Canada, where we're based. And you're seeing, you know, almost every week a new jurisdiction changing the laws, making acceptable for medical or making acceptable for recreational. And I would say that the impact is huge. It continues to grow at an astronomical rate. I would say there's just every week there's more acceptance, more understanding, more education about the wonders of the cannabis plant and really what all their therapeutic benefits.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about this a little bit. We obviously saw the rise in cannabis companies in 2017 into 2018. But to be quite honest, in 2019, cannabis companies had a really bad year. You know, what are the major challenges facing entrepreneurs and companies operating in this space in this current environment?
Well, you know, it was about 3 years ago when we got into the cannabis space, and it was really an investor craze where I thought, wow, you know, millions of people can't be wrong. Let me see what all the hype is about. And I started to educate myself about cannabis, and I realized, okay, these investors are onto something. This is a phenomenal plant. It's been used for 5,000 years. It's now coming off prohibition. It's becoming legal. Like, it's a multi-billion dollar opportunity. And those investors were right. But then it sort of took off maybe beyond what the value should have been. And over the past couple of years, you've just had too many companies getting funded. And then the funding that they were receiving, you know, the management of a lot of these cannabis companies was being very optimistic and thinking, oh yeah, we can take debt. We can take convertible debt. And I would just look at these deals getting announced by these public companies companies over and over again and thinking, you know, what's going to happen in 6 months or a year when this debt comes due and they can't pay it? And sure enough, you know, over the past year, you started really to see some cannabis companies tumble just because of really sloppy corporate structures, too much debt, you know, convertible terms that just weren't maintainable. And so, you know, you see the companies falling just because of that. On top of that, you had really, I would say, you know, a huge letdown by the Canadian government. And although, yes, it was great and fantastic that they made cannabis legal, they made so many screw-ups along the way that they caused many, many companies to just waste money or lose money. And, you know, they finally made enough, granted enough licenses to produce the marijuana, but then they weren't fast enough with the rollout to give them the outlets to sell at retail. So I would say that, you know, it's a combination of a slow rollout by the Canadian government, which still has to be fixed on the retail side, combined with overregulation in general in Canada. In addition to that, just so much investor excitement and optimism that it was too easy to fund these companies. Too many companies got funded, and now you're basically going to see it. You know, we have seen a correction, and I think we'll continue to see that as any company who took too much debt on that couldn't really, should never have gotten that debt is going to really struggle.
Penny, can you talk to us a little bit about the wellness aspects when it comes to edible mushrooms? My goodness, I mean, we're here in 2020, brand new decade. I remember when I first started doing cannabis interviews, it was an odd thing. I felt like, wow, you know, what am I talking about? You know, because of the conventional wisdom surrounding it, this illegal drug, this substance, and talking about it in such a normal way. And now it's second nature to me. But as far as mushrooms, I feel like I'm back in that moment again going, what is going on here? Edible mushrooms. And I know it's not understood by the masses, but I know that if it's big, I mean, it's like turning the clock back on cannabis in the early days of implementation, you know, when Washington and Colorado went legal and the snowball effects that we're seeing from then until now. So talk to us a little bit about this and kind of open our eyes as to what you see the next few years playing out to be in this new realm.
Sure. I mean, I first started being exposed to the world of psychedelics at conferences where I saw some of the leading cannabis experts turn around and say to me, okay, this is the next big thing. And I'm starting to look at it now because, you know, we've succeeded in legalizing cannabis in Canada. We think it's coming in the US, but this is the next big thing is psychedelics. And, it took me at least 6 months before I could really get my head around what this meant and was it serious. And I was really surprised at the caliber of people that were getting behind it, really leaders from the cannabis industry, including, for example, people like Bruce Linton, who was the founder of Canopy Growth, and lots of doctors and scientists. And so I really started to look into it and try to understand it. And it, so mushrooms, magic mushrooms, as they're known, contain some compounds that are psychedelics. So one is psilocybin, one is psilocin. They probably have gazillions of other compounds we haven't even discovered yet. But those psychedelic compounds are now being thought to have huge potential therapeutic benefits for the mind. So they're not new. They've been used for thousands and thousands of years. They were used by the Aztecs. They were often used by ancient civilizations for spiritual practice or for medicine. But in the late 60s, they became illegal, you know, criminal. And so for the past 50 years, they really weren't looked at by the medical community. However, there's been a bit of a renaissance coming from places like Johns Hopkins University and lots of universities around the world that have been announcing the results of clinical trials and putting more money into clinical trials where there's some really exciting evidence that shows that psilocybin and other psychedelics can treat things like depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder in a way that no other drug has ever been able to. Like the results that are coming through are really mind-blowing. And so there's a huge movement starting amongst doctors and scientists and individuals to say, look, these compounds have huge potential. We have to do more research. We have to consider legalizing them. And you know, we have to think about maybe bringing them into our culture and using them as a medicine. Now, when you think about mushrooms, you might think about, oh, the edible mushrooms you can buy at the supermarket. And there's so many different varieties of mushrooms and magic mushrooms. And I just want to clarify, you know, when I talk about magic mushrooms, I'm talking about the ones with psilocybin, and those are generally illegal in most places. They're not legal to take recreationally. They are generally, you can do R&D with them for scientific research, but they're a controlled substance. However, edible mushrooms, also called functional mushrooms or wild mushrooms, such as cordyceps, lion's mane, shiitake, these mushrooms have been used for decades to treat many things, and they're also having a bit of a renaissance in that people are getting more and more knowledgeable about all their benefits. And their benefits are include things like improving your memory, improving your cognitive ability, improving your immunity. So it generally is around anything to do with the brain and the immune system that edible mushrooms support. And so you sort of have these two different areas, and I kind of compare it to cannabis early days when you had hemp, which doesn't contain THC. And then you have marijuana, which has THC, all kinds of cannabinoids, and the hemp, you know, you could use to make clothes and buildings, and you know, it's been used for a long time, and it has no psychoactive properties. And then you have the THC. So when it comes to mushrooms, I think about the psilocybin as being sort of like THC. So you have hundreds, probably thousands of varieties of mushrooms that are edible, that are healthy, that you can buy at the grocery store, that have no psilocybin. And then you have your strains of magic mushrooms, which have psilocybin. And so those are the ones that it's not legal in North America to grow them, not legal in Canada and the US to grow them, although it's legal to conduct research around them. But there's jurisdictions opening up around the world where those are becoming legal, or they've just never been criminalized. And then there's also cities now that are popping up in North America, for example, in Denver, in Vancouver, where the cities are saying, look, we recognize the benefit of this plant, and we're not going to enforce anything against if people want to start using it and selling it.
Penny, so if you would share with us maybe some of the consequences, if any, of consuming these magic mushrooms. I mean, you know, for those of us who aren't very familiar with it, I mean, are there complications or consequences for taking this that are long-term problematic for people's health?
Well, you know, I'm not a doctor, but I think the concern in the 60s was that people were taking high doses, they weren't taking them in a clinical setting, and there were reports of people having bad trips, which was like a psychological event that could traumatize somebody for a long period. So they have that danger if they're not used properly. When they're used in a clinical setting by scientists, by a research facility, it's, you know, it's different ballgame. They've had very, very positive results. So generally the research that's been conducted has to do with a clinical trial, the use of psychedelics, where in some cases the person will take a single dose, but they'll be in a, you know, a very friendly, controlled environment with a therapist and a guided trip, and they'll be trying to deal with whatever it is, be it, you know, there's been studies where they're dealing with anxiety from having terminal cancer, or dealing with depression or post-traumatic stress. And the results of those clinical trials have been absolutely phenomenal. And the results of the clinical trials that I've seen and heard about are that there haven't been any negative consequences. There haven't been any bad trips that could be dealt with, but there's definitely a danger. And that's why, you know, I'm not talking about a revolution in terms of recreational use, because this is still a controlled substance. I'm talking about a renaissance of psychedelic research and the potential for its use as a therapeutic.
Right. Well, I'm scrolling down right now, the corporate presentation, Yield Growth. I highly recommend everyone go and check out the website, yieldgrowth.com. We'll have the links in the description area. You can check out the corporate presentation there. We really haven't talked about the business model of the company, Penny. Maybe you can give our listeners an idea of what specifically Yield Growth does and how it makes its money, and you know, what's the business model? What was it when it started, and where we are today, and you know, what investors can expect kind of coming down the line here?
Sure, absolutely. So we develop, Yield Growth develops, manufactures, and sells plant-based wellness products, and we conduct research into plant-based therapeutic compounds. And so we're a wellness company. We own the cannabis wellness brands Urban Juve, Red and Well, and Jack and Jane, and we're developing an edible mushroom brand called Flourish Mushroom Labs, which has coffees and soups and a lot of other products in development. So our all-natural skincare brand, Urban Juve, has signed distribution agreements for distribution in Canada, Germany, Colombia, Brazil, Costa Rica, Panama, Argentina, El Salvador, several other South American countries, Greece, Cyprus, and about three other European countries, including Bulgaria, Romania, and Serbia. And we're now negotiating for all of Europe and the US. So we just launched Urban Juve about a year ago, and we've had just tremendous growth in terms of building out its distribution channels. The product line has 12 products right now, and they contain hemp. So we have a proprietary ingredient that we have filed patent protection over, and that is the hemp root oil. So we have a proprietary way of extracting it. It's very delicate. That also has a lot of therapeutic compounds in it, including lots of different terpenes, specifically Friedland, which evidence shows, some of the research shows, it allows the body to absorb other cannabinoids much faster. So when you combine the hemp root with CBD or THC, you get much more therapeutic benefit than you would if you didn't have it. So our Urban Juve products are for the skin, and they're to improve the skin's health. We also have a line of products that are really developed with the intention of managing pain. And that's where cannabis has the greatest potential, in my opinion, is when you put it into a topical, when you put THC and CBD into a topical cream or gel, and you put it on your body and it relieves muscle, it can relieve muscle aches. You know, there's a lot of relief it can provide. Now, you have to be careful about making medical claims when you sell the products, but generally people who buy THC topicals are buying it because they know what it can do. So we have Red and Well that's launched in Oregon. It's a full THC topicals and edibles brand. And we also have Jack and Jane, which we're developing for the Canadian market. So we have developed over 200 proprietary beauty, wellness, edible, and beverage formulas for commercialization. We've launched 17 products in the past year, and we filed 13 patents to protect our formulas. We've also done licensing deals to help other companies have very high quality, all natural products in their product line. So all of our products are completely natural. And they're meant to be healthy. So we've had a lot of success. Our each quarter over the past 8 quarters has been, you know, growing. We've had increased revenue every quarter. You can take a look at our financial statements that are filed on SEDAR. But last year we did 3 million. This year we reported 3.8 million in our first 3 quarters alone. These are in Canadian dollars. And so, you know, we're growing at a very fast pace, and we have an absolutely terrific management team supporting us.
Well, I was just about to follow up with that. You've managed to assemble quite the team. Would you mind expanding a little bit, you know, giving us some of the brief notes on who you've managed to bring on board for Yield Growth and, you know, how important they are to this team?
Sure, no problem. You know, we've been really lucky to attract executives from multi-billion dollar companies to help and grow our business, which as a venture company where we started, you know, having that kind of big business experience has really been tremendous. So our COO, Tamara Milk, she comes from a company called Aritzia, which is a public company that's got over $1 billion market cap. She was an executive vice president there. So really in charge of running things and operations efficiently. And, you know, when we're talking about consumer packaged goods, which is essentially what we do, efficiency is key. And she's just been phenomenal at, you know, really making our operations as efficient as they can be, and really allowing us to roll out new products and build out our distribution network. And when she was at Aritzia, she, you know, she saw it grow from, I think she was there for 19 years. So she saw it go from the early stages to revenues of over $100 million. And that company, actually, because it's a clothing company with several different brands, it's kind of similar to Yield in that we are, you know, we're a consumer products company with several different brands that we develop in-house, and we're growing at a fast pace too. So that kind of experience is great. And we also have poached the head of their e-commerce, and that's great for somebody, you know, who's been overseeing an e-commerce platform that does over 100 million in total in sales. And also our in-house legal counsel and VP licensing, Amy Frankel, comes from Aritzia, but she also has experience working at Skechers, which is another multi-billion dollar company. And at both those companies, she worked before the IPO and after, and saw each of these companies grow to over $1 billion valuation. We also have on our board of directors, Tom Bond, who was formerly the CFO and the CEO of MAC Cosmetics, which is right now the largest beauty brand in the world. And so his network and his contacts are phenomenal. The head of our advisory board, Jeff Smith, used to be the chairman of Johnson & Johnson, which is the world's largest pharmaceutical company. And he was actually the president of their consumer products division in the US, and built it from a number three position to a number one position. So overseeing brands like Neutrogena and Aveeno. So, you know, this is just like the who's who of the world of consumer packaged goods in, you know, several multi-billion dollar companies. Our CFO used to work at Coca-Cola and Pepsi in his early days, out over in China. And we also have an engineer who has experience from the big beverage companies like Coca-Cola and Nestle. So we have just a phenomenal team. And I think that's been the secret to our success over the past year.
It really is impressive who you've been able to bring on board. I mean, these are names, as far as the companies they work with, I mean, very recognizable for the people listening. One thing, I guess I want to ask more of like a final question here, and just kind of in a wrap-up fashion. Let's talk about the first mover advantage when it comes to, you know, the mushroom angle, you know, Flourish, this brand that you guys are putting forward here. How important is this? I mean, and I can think of Canopy Growth, right? You know, when it comes to cannabis a few years ago, you know, their first mover and what we've seen with them, how they've gone on to be a billion-dollar company. How important is the first mover advantage when it comes to mushrooms?
Kenneth, it's huge. You know, that's a great question. I've been in the capital markets for 20 years and I've seen, you know, the rise of so many new industries. And a lot of times that first company that comes out with a, you know, with a solid business in the public markets does so well with investors because they get it and they see the potential. And so I think it's huge. And here we are on, you know, the first day, the first business day back of a new decade, which I hope is going to be known as the Roaring Twenties. And, you know, we have so much happening with technology. And it's crazy that in this ever so connected world of 7 billion plus people, loneliness is reaching epidemic proportions. If you look at the World Health Organization numbers, they say depression now affects more than 264 million people. And in 2016, the same organization reported that more than 1.9 billion adults are overweight and a third of them are obese. So we have these huge problems. And then we have the renaissance of psychedelic research, which is beginning to demonstrate that mushrooms can be used to treat depression, anxiety, addiction, potentially food cravings. And so I think that the potential for plant-based psychedelics to be used for therapeutic use could be the next consumer craze. And any aspect of this industry could go viral at any time. So to be a first mover in this industry, on the, you know, to be able to offer consumers the potential for products or to be able to develop these drugs, you know, we have filed a patent and, you know, we're a first mover. If our patent succeeds, you know, we have priority internationally on that patent. And then, you know, as investors start to understand the potential, you know, I think this movement could really go viral at any time. I think you're going to start to see more and more reports in the newspaper. We're starting to see it in the major newspapers in Canada. It was on the news last week, on TV, and I think this thing is really going to take off.
Yeah, that is powerful. And I think we opened up a can of worms here. Because we really don't cover, we've never covered a mushroom company, a company that is has their focus or part of their focus on mushrooms. I'll ask you this. Where can listeners learn more about your company, get more details, and find out more about what you guys are doing?
Please go to our website, yieldgrowth.com. There's places there you can sign up for our email newsletters. If you look up our symbol BOSS in Canada or BOSQF in the US, look at any of our press releases. You can see contact numbers and emails, and we're happy to discuss, you know, what we're up to and what we've done at any time. So, you know, please, we invite everyone to reach out.
Penny White, everyone. Penny, you are a powerhouse. Thank you so much for taking the time and coming on to Crush the Street with me today.
Thank you, Kenneth. It's been great. Have a great decade.
You too.